to the Rink, your source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tape Lake Greeley. I'm finishing up my conversation with Ryan Classic. We're talking about who's coming, who's going, some of the situations the NHL has gotten itself into, more goalie talk, and of course, Ron Tugnet. Hey, why not? This is episode 64, part 2 of The Rink.
And just like Timo Solani, we're back. Timo Solani, of course, you know, says that he's going to sign again with the Ducks. And he might be bringing Paul Kariya in as well, which should be the fastest turnaround that we have ever seen of any fans from hating a guy to loving a guy.
And because that union worked so well in Colorado.
Well, you know, that's...
But it's Anaheim. Maybe this time it'll work again in Anaheim.
Of course, I'm talking to Ryan Classic. On Twitter, you can find him at Ryan Classic. And all one word, of course. And which you write sometimes for Sports Blog Nation, which blog?
The Ottawa Senators blog, Silver 7, which is silver7sens, oneword.com.
Silver7sens. Excellent. And wearing a fine Spokane Chiefs jersey. Very nice. Well done. Timo Solani, you know, and Paul Kariya getting back together in Anaheim. I mean, okay, yes, there was the failed experiment in Colorado, which basically vilified Paul Kariya for the Ducks fans for turning down a lot of money to go somewhere else for
very little money.
Well, for very little money, and you know, frankly, to a, you know, from a team that basically was a Cinderella story to a team that maybe was a slightly more sure bet as a contender, and then
slightly.
Well, I mean, you know, you still had nobody expected what happened to the Ducks the next year to really happen to the Ducks. Look at Martin Chiguer. I mean, Martin Chiguer, J.S. Chiguer. He lost the Stanley Cup, won the Conn Smythe playoff MVP, and really, I think it just kind of took its toll on him a little bit emotionally. He's a guy who, you know, takes his emotions into the goal as well, and you know, I'm not going to slight the guy for that. You know, he's had some rough times over his life, and he takes, you know, and sometimes that winds up creeping into his game. I'm not going to say anything bad about the guy for that, certainly. But, you know, when Solani went in and went to Colorado, he had a bum knee, and he really wasn't saying much about his bum knee. Paul Kariya, he didn't perform as expected, but then again, he got hurt pretty quickly. And that was part of his problem. With Solani, though, I mean, Solani got sent down to the fourth line because he was playing so bad. We hit the lockout and he has his knee scoped and he turned it back on. I mean, it wasn't the Solani of old, but obviously, you know, the guy wasn't as young as he was when he was with the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, look, it was pretty impressive after the lockout. You know, in Colorado, Kariya played 51 games, 11 goals, 25 assists. That's 36 points. The previous year, he had 81 with Anaheim in the regular season.
It was the lack of Steve Ruchin as a centerman.
Oh, Ruch.
I'm sorry. Stefan Yell is just not the same.
But, you know, I mean,
much as I love Yeller,
it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Solani this year. I mean, you know, he's not getting any younger, you know.
He's not getting any younger, but he actually looks like he had about as good, if not a better season last year than the year before.
Hmm.
He put together two back-to-back 27-goal years, and the guy scored a lot of goals and somehow keeps having a little bit in the tank.
Yeah.
He's never going to come up anywhere near the 76 goals he had in his rookie year.
He's
40 years old.
That if he were what's his butt? Kovalchuk, he'd have what, 3 more years in his contract?
At minimum? Actually, I think 4 or 5.
Good old, yeah. Actually, and the thing with Solani last year, 27 goals, 21 assists in 54 games. He was out for a little while. I can't remember what he broke. He broke his jaw at one point.
He did
but
break
wasn't
his
there
jaw.
Another injury that he had?
I think so. I think it was a knee or a hip or something. Temu knows. He knows better than I do what his injury was.
Let's see. Broken jaw, and he missed 17 games with a left hand injury. He missed 8 games with the broken jaw, and then he missed 1 game of the flu. So that pretty much does that. By the way, I would just like to congratulate the fine makers of Thirsty Beaver Beer who are not a sponsor. This is not a commercial message whatsoever. Thirsty Beaver up here in Canada, pretty tasty beer.
Tree Brewing.
I'm sorry, what was it?
Tree Brewing.
Tree Brewing Company.
And if you talk about their beer on Twitter, they will retweet you.
They will retweet you.
And then tell you that they have plenty more beer at their brewery for you.
Which is good because I thoroughly enjoy their beer. What was it that you said? We're going to do the beaver. We're doing the beaver.
We're doing the beaver.
We're doing the beaver. A little bit of Red Wings news, and I don't like to talk too much about the Red Wings because I know that they're really for all the slights that maybe some of the fans feel about the Red Wings. There's plenty of coverage. There's plenty of coverage of the Red Wings. But two old dudes to talk about, Mike Modano and Chris Chelios. First off, Mike Modano signs, was a $1.25 million one-year deal with the Red Wings.
Something along those lines. Yeah. It wasn't that much money. And I know Modano's got some money issues, so I really don't feel like...
He does? Can...
Yeah, I think he made some bad investments over the years. Mike, if your lawyers are hearing this, I don't actually know what your problems are. So,
if you have any, $1.75 million.
But $500,000 of that is in bonus money.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, CapGeek.
Yeah, good job, CapGeek. CapGeek.com for all your geek and cap needs.
It's run by one guy.
Really, it's just one guy.
And good work on him.
Yeah, I hope he's making some money off of it because he does a really good job.
Well, he certainly has a bunch of ads. But
I like the ad up here that says Don Cherry should retire, yes or no.
I have seen that ad so many times while traversing through the internet, usually on American sites.
I don't know if you've seen this at all or not, but up the street at the CBC Vancouver, there is they have for sale Don Cherry beer glasses, and each glass is basically in the style of a Don Cherry style suit. I can't decide if it is the greatest thing ever or the most nauseating thing ever, but it might actually be both.
I think it's actually both.
So Mike Modano, the question came up on Twitter, you know, like, why doesn't this guy just retire? And I have 1.75 million reasons why the guy doesn't just retire. You know, if somebody is willing to pay you to play hockey, aren't you going to do it? I mean, why wouldn't you?
Well, there's that whole thing where fans think that a player owes them some sort of loyalty.
Mm. Which we kind of talked about a little bit before.
Which we did kind of talk about. And Modano's case, people feel like two different cities own him and that he owes them some sort of loyalty. Which is why when he narrowed his choices down to Minnesota, San Jose, and Detroit, people were really pulling for Minnesota. Because, you know, when he was drafted by the North Stars, he was the face of the North Stars and then became the face of the Dallas Stars. So it would have been a nice story.
Right.
Instead, he goes to Detroit. But, you know, loyalty is a thing that really... It's a fan thing. It's pulling at the fan heartstrings and... It is a business, and it's about money. And if you still feel like you're capable of doing something you love, and you don't feel like you need to retire, you feel like you're completely capable of it, and you want to keep doing it, and somebody comes over and hands you a bag that says, look, $1.75 million.
You can do it with us, right?
Do it with us.
Yeah.
Plus, he's from Michigan.
Right.
He started his career in the minors in college, going through Michigan. Mm-hmm. This is... Effectively going home for him.
Well, and, you know, the last time I checked, Dallas wasn't offering him a contract, and Minnesota wasn't offering him a contract.
Actually, I think Minnesota did.
Really?
And then their backup plan apparently was John Madden, who they just signed today.
You know, that's the thing, though. Madden has a couple of cups, and, you know, I mean, Madonna has one, but, well, Brett Hull has it, you know, stored in some blue paint, can of blue paint. But still, that's not, no, you know, Brett. Yeah, that was a skate in the crease jab. That was a skate in the crease.
Have you heard his explanation for the skate in the crease thing?
He won a damn cup that way? I don't know. I don't really care. Brett Hull is one of those guys that can he'll say, I don't think that really what Brett Hull says interests me as much as just, you know, knowing that a cup got won by the bending of the rules. I don't even really think find it the breaking, but the bending of the rules.
Oh no, I think you might enjoy this just a little bit. Mm. Now, I have read this as being a quote attributed to Brett Hull.
Mm.
As in, here's the quote, says Brett Hull. But he hasn't told it to my face, so technically it's hearsay. But when asked about it, his explanation was basically, well, they're going to be reviewing the rule in the summer. So they told us behind the scenes that they weren't going to call it as seriously in the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
And that's why.
Well, the dude, he doesn't have to explain it. He scored a damn goal while his skate was in the crease, and they let it go. It's not his fault that they let it go. You know honestly, what are you going to do? You know what? When was the last time that you saw a player say, you know what, he really didn't commit that penalty. He shouldn't go in the box. It's all good. You know, really, that wasn't hooking. He never even touched me with his stick. Are you kidding me? When do you think that he's actually going to go, hey, you know, I don't need, you know, I know this would win us the cup, but honestly, I didn't, you really shouldn't allow that goal.
That rule was such bull.
I don't know how we got off track on this, but I will say one more thing about it. Dallas won that in six games.
I was about to bring that up.
Seven.
Six. Dear Buffalo fans, and I have a lot of friends in upstate New York. Yeah. That was overtime in the Stanley Cup Finals, but it was game six.
Yeah.
You know, had that goal not counted, there's still a very good chance that Dallas would have scored.
Or won in the next game.
Or won in the next game. So you can't sit around just blaming that particular thing. And
yes, you can, because yes, that is what makes hockey fans strong people. Swear it is. Hockey fans love that kind of thing. I you know.
But we were talking the other night over some drinks about how Anaheim and Ottawa played in the 07 finals. And I slammed down my fist and went, well, if we hadn't had like the 9-day break, then Ottawa totally would have been able to handle that. So I'm as guilty of it as anybody else.
Right, exactly. You know,
I still maintain they would
were
have done
just,
better.
They were just too darn good. That's what it was.
They were too darn soft in Ottawa.
Back to Madonna for a second here. You know, this Madonna, the thing is that he's one of the most celebrated American players out there. I was actually kind of surprised to find out how good Keith Tkachuk was, as an American player and where he ranked in kind of those American stats. But really, Mike Modano, one of the best American players out there, and still adding to his stats. I mean, it's hard to complain if the guy wants to play. You know, and you know, while the Detroit Shady Acres retirement home / Red Wings will continue to, you know, I just, good for him. You know, really, I have nothing against the guy doing that.
That's their fifth 35-plus contract.
Wow.
And that's not players who are 35 and above. That's players who signed at age 35 and above.
Man, that's, which is, you know, and maybe they have a false sense of security with this kind of thing. I mean, they had Brett Hull. They had.
Who didn't have Brett Hull?
Well, yeah, that's true. Dominic Hasek, not a young man when he made his comeback to the Red Wings either.
Twice.
Yep. And, you know, and now we have to talk about him, Chris Chelios. I wonder if he's just going to be happy running his Chelly's Chili Bar in downtown Detroit, which actually, I will say this, damn good chili in Chili's. I'm not kidding. That man made, you know, it's not like he made the chili, but it was his joint. And even though it closed down a little early and it's in downtown Detroit.
It did close down?
Well, I mean, at night it closed down pretty early. But
not trying to make a Detroit joke here.
No. I'll make plenty of Detroit jokes, but at the same time, damn good chili. And I enjoyed my time in Chili's Chili Bar.
Does he only have one in Detroit? Do you know?
I think that's the only one that's the only one I know of. Chris Chelios did the unthinkable and retired in the classic fashion of his original communication method to announce it to the world. He actually did in a cave painting. Chris Chelios retires at the age of what, 42, 45, 46. And you know what? I mean, here's the thing with him. He went down. He played with the Chicago Wolves, the AHL farm team of the Atlanta Thrashers, waited his time out and waited for him to get him, you know, and got called up. And you know what? I never heard him complain once.
I actually heard him say he was really happy. It was like a whole new experience for him. He'd never really played in the AHL before.
He set a bad example for Javi Bulin in his driving offenses, because he was pulled over for was never convicted of a DUI. I'm not saying that he was ever convicted of, but boy, that's a if you're Nikolai Habibulin, he's like, I'll get off. Look at Chris Chelios. Yeah, no, maybe not. Poor Chelly.
You're talking about the cave paintings, but it looks like Ken Holland had to translate this for everybody. Because I'm reading this TSN article here, and I'm only seeing two quotes. One is, "It looks like I'm going to stay in Detroit and take a job with the Red Wings," Chelios reportedly told a Chicago Cubs TV audience. And then the only other quote they have is actually a Ken Holland text message to TSN that just says, "He is joining our team, but not as a player. Title not determined."
You know, maybe he has a contract to sell chili at the Joe Louis Arena. Maybe that's a possibility. Well, you know, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, okay.
It's like Scott Niedermeyer. Mm-hmm. Niedermeyer got a job with the Ducks afterwards, after retiring. Mm-hmm. And then somebody asked him, I think even during the press conference, well, what are your new responsibilities? And I think he went something like, you know, actually, I don't know what my title means.
Right.
I don't know what my actual job is going to be at the press conference announcing him having a new job.
Mm-hmm.
God, these players are just getting front office jobs doing.
Well, you know,
doing
I mean,
a paycheck.
Listen, the NHL is big on selling nostalgia. I mean, look at, you know, it's like I say about the New Jersey Devils and that red, black, and green and white jersey. It's not a money grab if you want to buy it. All right. And that's the thing. It's a nostalgia trip. And eventually, I think the NHL is going to run out of nostalgia to sell. And they're going to have to sell the current game one of these days. But regardless, I think that's part of it, is that, you know, I mean, you have these guys that everybody loves and you want to find a place for them. Now, then again, you have the Luke Robitaille who actually take it and run with it and do an excellent job. Luke Robitaille is making that team so much more fan friendly by his own work.
He was running the King's Twitter account two drafts ago.
I believe it.
At least for quite a bit. He didn't respond to me when I tried to convince him to take Danny Heatley.
Listen, not everybody's going to respond to you. And I think that's a huge mistake. But I was very close to meeting Robitaille, actually, when I was at the Armenian Heritage game for the LA Kings. And instead, I actually met Marty McSorley.
How'd that go over?
He was really nice. I thanked him for the time there. I'm not sure he actually understood what I was saying, but he was really nice. And that's, you know what? That counts for a lot for me.
That's
know,
pretty much my experience with Claude Lemieux.
Yeah?
I shook his hand. I thanked him for the time that he spent in Colorado and what it meant to me. And he was very humble and said thank you. And it kind of drove off. But he was leaving the arena.
Well.
But the thing was, it was a San Jose versus Colorado game in San Jose, and I'm like the one guy not wearing a Sharks jersey coming up and shaking his hand.
I got Brett Hull to sign a jersey, and he notoriously will not sign anything for fans. But he was on the cell phone, and I feel bad about ambushing.
You're spending a lot of time on Brett Hull.
Well, you know, he's like Jeremy Roenick. He's a character, you know. I mean, he was the guy who was really good at hockey and probably didn't want to be there. You know, he's kind of like the guy who takes over the bar for the father. You know, like it's just handed down through generations. And there were times when he was really just completely unhappy being in hockey, and that's, you know, I mean, it's a strange lifestyle. You and I, a lot of the fans, have no idea how it is to go through the Canadian juniors. You're away from your family. You're staying with a whole nother family that's putting you up, a somewhat professional environment, and yet you're still, you know, what, 17, 18, 16?
16, and if you're a special case like Tavares, 15.
Yeah.
I mean, upwards through possibly 21.
It's a crazy lifestyle that I have a hard time imagining it. You know, I travel a lot for a living, and I can't imagine what these guys go through, you know?
I've been down underneath the stadiums here in Vancouver after Vancouver Giants WHL games. Mm-hmm. And yeah, even just watching the kids come out in the suits afterwards. And sometimes they've got family there, and sometimes they don't. And yeah, I'm in a big city here, and mm-hmm. yet even these guys.
Yeah. Go to round two or three of the NHL draft and look at the guys who get drafted, and you know, I mean, they're you look at them and then you think, wow, man, that was me when I was 16 or 17, you know. I mean, you know, there's acne problems, there's, you know, you're still filling out that suit, you know, there's just that awkwardness, and yet you just got drafted by, you know, an NHL team and are still, you know, still developing into a potential NHL player.
A friend of mine actually sent me a link to a story, and fortunately I can't remember the source, on Calvin Pickard, Colorado's second round pick. Mm-hmm. Who's a goalie who plays for Seattle. And I was asking him all these questions, you know, how do you feel about your older brother being in the AHL and part of that family? And then it mentioned that he had to go because 1 week after being drafted, he had to go attend his high school graduation.
Yeah.
I remember my high school graduation. Yes, I'm young. Laugh all you want.
I remember mine. I remember
mine. Mine was a little more recent than yours, but...
A little. A lot.
You know, I was mostly concerned about just getting in the car and leaving and being done with that. And these are kids who, you know, yeah, they're getting leaving afterwards, but they just got drafted into the NHL. Some of these kids, like a Matt Duchene, mm-hmm. might be there in the fall.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one thing to talk about the billets and that kind of crazy lifestyle, but then to be suddenly living in Adam Foote's house. And,
true. I mean, I'm going to embarrass myself here. Tyler Seguin, I met him at the draft, very briefly, and he was with his coach from the Plymouth Whalers, and his mom, and he was talking on the phone and texting a bit, and very distracted because, hey, you know what? He just got drafted second overall. You know, you're going to be making the Bruins basically right out of camp next year. All kinds of stuff. And, you know, and yet here he is, you know, at a bar with a soda in his hand, with a Coke, because he can't, you know, he's not old enough to have a beer yet. And that's, it was wacky. And to be able to, like, meet his mom, you know. And by the way, speaking of high school graduation, I had hair when I was in high school. I had long hair. So if that tells you how long ago it was. I can't believe we got to from Chris Chelios to here.
Actually, Chris Chelios to high school graduation. I can see that.
Well, I can't see, you know. I'm not going to say it. There's actually a picture of me and Tyler Seguin on my blog, jerseysandhockeylove.com. I put up a picture of my Plymouth Whalers jersey, which is who we played for in the OHL. I've actually been posting a couple jerseys recently on my blog, surprisingly enough.
Which I want to ask a quick question.
Yeah, please.
Since we you brought it up, as far as it's not.
Oh no.
it's not a throwback or a cash grab if you want to buy it.
Bring it.
the Devils' red jerseys with the green yoke.
Right.
The throwbacks. Like? Dislike?
Because
this is an argument I have had with people.
Right. No, it's... Okay, now this is a guy... I'm a guy who has a Kazan Akbar's jersey, which is red, green, and white. And, I mean, we're talking like serious green like that New Jersey Devils green. And I don't think it's a bad thing. Well, I don't like that they're using it for one game, and that's it. And then this next year, as I understand it so far, one game.
If you're going to be using it, I'm surprised.
If you're going to do it, have a third. Have it as your third, or you know, have it as your home third, or you know, a fourth, whatever. If I wouldn't mind a fourth jersey. I know this is kind of, you know, I mean, I go to games in the minors where every year they change their jersey somewhat so that, you know, maybe the fans will buy something else, and then they've got, you know, another two that are specialty wacky. Valentine's Day, or you know, there was the Rod Blagojevich. Did you remember the Rod Blagojevich game in Las Vegas?
I remember the whole thing. One
was in prison stripes, so the refs couldn't wear stripes. So
that I didn't know. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, one was like all orange, so like you know the orange jumpsuit. One was prison stripes, so the refs couldn't wear in stripes or you know wear their stripes. So they wore police outfit type. You know, blue, almost like a warden. So the Rocky Mountain Rage of the Central Hockey League, who did not last more than 4 years, I believe, they had in their first year, they had like four specialty jerseys. One of them Christmas, one of them snowboarding, one of them Mardi Gras.
Did it have beads? And they were all cartoony.
Yes, of course. Fake beads. They were all those were all cartoony. But you know, I mean, anyways, if you're going to do the jersey, don't just do it for one night. Do it for multiple nights. If you want to, again, what are we talking about here? We're talking about kind of that NHL heritage throwback. You know, we're trying to bank on that, you know, on the history of the game. I think that's great, but make it more than once. You know, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but you know, hey, you want to go? Let's go way back. How about they wear Colorado Rockies jerseys? How about they wear Kansas City Scouts jerseys? Because that's who they were before they were the New Jersey Devils.
All of those jerseys you can actually use in NHL 10 and NHL 09. If you play as
you video game nerds, you know, I played Scotty Wozelewski of the Face Off Hockey Show. I played him in NHL 94. I had never played 94 ever. I mean, this is like the heralded game. This is the one that was in Swingers where they're like, you know, it's not so much me, it's Jeremy Roenick. He's just good. You know, it's, and you know what? I got my ass whipped.
I'm going to be sacrilegious here and go, I actually liked 96 more.
Ooh.
Now, that might be because I got 96 as a Christmas gift and never actually owned 94. But 96 was pretty badass. I mean, it had a create a player feature.
You are a nerd.
I am a nerd because not only did I use the create a player feature, but I had to read the hockey news little profiles to guess some things. So I made a Wade Bielak who scored 92 goals,
you know,
with the Quebec Nordiques.
I bet you probably had a Ron Tugnutt that could win a game.
Actually, Tugnutt was pretty brutally awful in that. And poor Ron. I love Ron.
Yeah, let's. I think we need to get something out of the way here. This is going to get a little, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Not meta, I guess, but, you know, Ryan
inside baseball.
Ryan basically really loves Ron Tugnutt. Ryan loves Ron Tugnutt in a way that is generally reserved for Columbus Blue Jackets fans that were there the first year. He has a love of Ron Tugnutt that I have never seen before.
I actually own a first-year Columbus Blue Jackets jersey.
Yeah, and you're going to probably customize it to, say, Ron Tugnutt.
I'm not going to lie. I have looked for places that will do that, yes.
Now, Ron Tugnutt and I, my history with Ron Tugnutt, is more of when he was, for instance, playing with Dallas. And when Marty Turco would falter, I would, especially in the playoffs against against the Avalanche, I would stand.
This bodes well for the Blackhawks here.
And yell at the television. Bring me the head of Ron Tugnutt, because I thought it was funny. Now you can probably rattle off some stats about Ron Tugnutt. I would like to first address Ron Tugnutt's 1989-1990 season in Quebec with the Nordiques, in which he played 35 games. His record was 5-24. He had a 4.61 goals against average and 8.59 save percentage. Now,
I'd like to point out they brought him back for the next season.
Yeah, I'm still not sure why. And in that next season, he won more games. He played 56 games. He went 12-29. So he did improve. And in the next season, he played 30 games for Quebec and went 6-17. I would just like to point out that first number of those two is the wins, and the second one is the losses. That higher one is the losses.
Tugnutt is a special guy.
Not call him Tugnutt all the time? I would like for you to call him Tuggers, because that probably was his nickname. And probably what I would consider the greatest puppy dog name ever. If I ever get a puppy, I'm going to name it Tuggers.
Well, I'm going to get a puppy first and name it Tuggers before you.
You're almost going to cry, aren't you, right now?
You know, there's a radio station in Ottawa that has a morning show that I listen to occasionally, and they podcast it. And I was listening to one last week, and sure enough, they bring up Ron Tugnutt and call him Tuggers. So, yes.
They call him Tuggers?
This is as of last week.
Wow.
Yeah. He's beloved in two cities, one, Columbus.
Right.
Pretty much for being the only thing they had going for them that first season.
Right.
And in Ottawa. But Ottawa's a funny, funny city. He does have that one really good year in Ottawa where he had goals against average below two, but that's kind of the same as the Halak effect. It's a Jacques Martin thing. But Ottawa is also the home. You bring up Tugnutt's awful stats.
Right.
In
those stats, I would like to point out that in Dallas, he had one winning season. And in Ottawa, he had winning seasons. He played 2 years in Dallas. And the first one, he went 15-10. 31 games.
He had four winning seasons in Ottawa.
He had four winning seasons in Ottawa, one winning season in Dallas, and that was that.
Pretty much.
But yeah.
Tugnutt was an all-star with Ottawa.
This is Ron Tugnutt.
Ron Tugnutt, NHL all-star.
Yep.
And, you know, you mock him, but he's also not the worst goalie from Ottawa to ever be named an all-star.
Do you really think that is something that is... that you would like put on a t-shirt and wear around town? Tugnutt, not the worst goalie from Ottawa to be an all-star. You know, I mean, obviously we're talking an economy of scale here, and yet that is not, I mean, and I don't want to get off on Ron Tugnutt too much, because, you know, really this, like you said, it is kind of inside baseball. It's a little bit meta. But, you know, and not everybody's going to be as interested in Ron Tugnutt as, let's say, you. But
anyone slash, no, really, just me.
Well, just you, probably. I'll probably get an email or two about that saying, you know, no, I like my Ron Tugnutt, too. Regardless.
Those people are right.
Regardless. Ron Tugnutt, worst goalie or worst goalie ever? And this is, you know, when I was in Philly, I saw...
This is what it feels like to be a guest on the Colbert Report in the early years, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Like, how the hell do I answer this? Worst or worst ever?
Those are your two choices. When I was in Philly, I saw a Flyers game. I cannot remember for the life of me who they were playing. But the Flyers lost. It was Boucher in goal. And they were up for a little while, and then, you know, tanked and then lost. And it was late regular season. We weren't in the playoffs yet. Still extremely uncertain if the Flyers would actually make the playoffs. And a guy behind me stands up and screams at the ice, "You are the worst goalie ever. Ever." And it was that's pretty brutal. Where does Ron Tugnutt rank?
Well, I'm gonna.
That's just not fair.
Based on those two, I'm gonna have to give him worst because not only is he not the worst goalie to ever play in an All-Star game, and again, Ron, if you're listening, which you're not, love you, but
obviously,
he's not even the worst Ottawa goalie to ever be an All-Star.
Who was the worst Ottawa goalie ever?
Yeah. First season, the NHL had that rule where you have to have at least one rep from every team.
Right.
The Senators sucked. A lot.
Right.
So, Peter
Which Storkowicz, is the whole reason that Scott Wasilewski of the Faceoff Hockey Show decided to pick them as his favorite team.
You know, he says that, but he's totally a Caps fan. He claims, but no. Scotty, you're great, but you're a Caps fan. Anyway, Peter Sidorkovich played 1 year with Ottawa before thankfully being traded for his sake and was an all-star with a record of 3-30-3.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. 3-30-3?
Yes.
Wow.
He was part of a team that won a single road game all season. They were 1-41 on the road. This is an awful team, and yet, because of that stupid rule, Peter Sidorkovich was an NHL All-Star. So, Tugnutt, not even the worst in his own team's history. And I'm just calling him the worst because you're making me call him the worst.
Well, I'm not, you know, I'm not holding a gun to your head. But it's true. Okay, so I know that you actually one of the things you wanted to kind of bring up was, since we're kind of talking goaltenders, and we have been talking goaltenders quite a bit, it's Peter Budaj, Colorado Avalanche backup goaltender, mostly on the bench last season.
And most of the other seasons, minus the Raycroft year.
Well, and minus the and the year that that he pretty much took over the job from Theodore. He did play less games than Theodore, and yet he's the guy who kind of got them within 1 point / 3 points, one point of the playoffs.
Oh, and who's the stats man now?
Just because I was actually there and watching the games and blogging heavily that year, actually. So there's my little bit of inside baseball. You are not a Budaj fan these days.
I'm not a Budaj fan. Okay. I've had an interesting thing in the last year and a half. I've been to three games where Budaj has been a goalie, and each time he has ended up on the bench, and each time it has been for a different goalie in front. I've seen Andrew Raycroft play in front of him. Mm-hmm. I have seen Craig Anderson play in front of him. And Craig Anderson, by the way, does look at ice girls when you see him live. He completely ignored the bench here in Vancouver because the ice crew was out cleaning the ice and just was not listening to Joe Sacco. He was just staring at the ice girls. And I've also seen Yaroslav Halak play in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I'm not a Budaj fan. I would rather have seen them play Tyler Wyman.
Right, who is no longer in the Avalanche farm system.
No, but he's not there in part because they retained Peter Budaj.
Right.
And, you know, when you're judging player signings now, because it's the cap era, you look at how much they make and how much their hit against the cap is, and then you compare them to everybody else who makes that kind of money.
Okay.
It seems like the Avalanche were so desperate to make sure they had a plan in place that they signed Budaj to something.
Right.
And it was 1.25 mil for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a few people going, why did we re-sign Budaj? Well, I guess he was more or less a sure thing. But this was the year where a whole bunch of other goalies ended up making a whole lot less. We're talking about Niemi. We're talking about Turco. Turco makes 500 grand. Not 500 grand. 50 grand more than Peter Budaj does.
Right.
Now, Turco obviously has the handshake, wink, wink promise that he'll be the number one goalie. But I look at some of these other goaltenders who've been signed to deals that are comparable. Johan Hedberg. I like Hedberg.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people like Hedberg.
The Moose.
The Moose. He signed in New Jersey for 1.5 mil.
No trade clause.
No trade clause because Jay Grossman, the agent for Johan Hedberg, no trade clause.
Right.
Ilya Kovalchuk, no trade clause. And Anton Volchenkov, no trade clause, seems to be the only person who can out-arm wrestle Lou Lamoriello.
Hmm.
got three clients with no trade clauses right. into Jersey this year.
A one-year no trade clause when you're only going to be playing like 15 games probably?
For $1.5 million.
Not bad.
Not
You know, not I think bad. That I think that a New Jersey Devils backup goaltender probably gets paid because they know that they're not going to play that much. It's like, tell okay, we'll Scott give you Clemenson. An extra $500,000.
Tell that to Scott Clemenson.
Well,
he actually did get played. He got paid to be played.
That's true. I've made enough cracks about Martin Brodeur and pizza in the last several episodes that I'm just going to let it go.
Neither one of us is a much of a Brodeur
regardless,
fan.
Budaj. Yeah.
Budaj. Again, we're going to go with a little bit of inside baseball. You and I talking the other day, and while I was praising Ron Tugnutt, you threw out another former senator and now Sabre and a bunch of other teams' goaltender who you thought was completely pathetic, Patrick Laleem. I took a quick peek. Last couple years, Patrick Laleem, roughly the same numbers as Peter Budaj.
Peter Budaj, okay.
Laleem, $650,000. Now, I understand that you probably want to sign Budaj because you like him. He's in your system, even though none of your fans really like him. But some of your fans.
Okay. I wouldn't go that far. Okay, but yeah.
But you are the team right now, the furthest away from the top of the salary cap. You still need to fill salary. They still got Peter Mueller and Chris Stewart to sign.
Right.
But even if you're that cash-strapped, you couldn't have gone after Dan Ellis, who made 1.5. Laleem made 650. Even Andrew Raycroft, who nobody would want to see back, but honestly had a really good year last year.
Right.
People here were very surprised. He is also making 650,000. Nidamaki, 2 million. Gerber, 500,000. Alex Auld. I would have preferred to see Alex Auld play in Colorado.
Okay.
And he's with Montreal now for 1 year, $1 million. He's one of the many who's usurped Martin Gerber. Auld is a dependable backup. Budaj? I freak out a little when Budaj is in the net. Unless he's playing St. Louis, he seems to have some kind of mastery over them. But I'd rather have Alex Auld. I'd rather have Martin Biron, who is making $875,000 over there in New York with the Rangers.
Okay.
There are so many other alternatives that, to me, seem like they would be better than Budaj. And I just don't understand it, because Craig Anderson, you don't want to play him as often as you did this past year, because he's going to burn out.
Right.
So it would be smarter to go after somebody who, I guess, I'd say the general populace, at least, would think is more dependable, because Budai's had enough chances right now in the Colorado system that you would think that all the management in there would know what he's about and see that he's not necessarily the best person for the job. He's had his flashes. He's taken over the crease from Theodore before.
Right.
But I don't think he's shown enough in the last year or so to warrant being given that backup role. And we're talking about before, 60 to 90 jobs open.
Right.
I'm not sure that Budaj would
earn one of those.
I think he might earn one of the 61 through 90 jobs.
Okay.
And not the backup for Colorado.
Right.
And I think there's plenty of other players who would have been much better suited in there.
Well, let me throw a few things at you here.
Shoot.
Number one, so he was in for 15 games, which, obviously not all starters. He went 5-5-2, which is not great. Okay, obviously, but goals against average, 2.64, and a save percentage of 917. Craig Anderson, goals against average, 2.64, save percentage, 917. Exactly the same. Exactly the same.
Touché, my friend.
One shutout in 15 games.
Against St. Louis.
Craig Anderson, 7 shutouts. In his 71 games, so really it's probably like if you were to average it 1 to 1.5, I think something like that in shutouts. You bring up Alex Auld. Alex Auld would probably not be signed by the Avalanche because Alex Auld is associated with Vancouver, especially around the time when the whole Todd Bertuzzi incident happened. Now I bring that up, and at the same time I realize the dichotomy and the hypocrisy of Brad May.
I was about to say that, but
yeah, no, I I'm with you there. Regardless, I, because I was there in, I was there in the year that I kind of took over the crease from Theodore. I was in Colorado. It was my first real full year of blogging, of hockey blogging. And it was fun. And it was, you know, it was kind of, it was a little bit special in a way. It was a team that really should have been doing better, wasn't doing well, and then all of a sudden just got on this tear. And one of the people that got them there in a big way was Peter Budaj. And I remember the two things I really remember about Budaj as far as the feeling that Budaj was at the time was that when I went to the rink, when I went to the Pepsi Center and Jose Theodore was starting, I felt gypped. It's not, you know, it's not necessarily right, but it's true. I felt kind of gypped by it. You know, I was like, I felt like I kind of wasn't getting my money's worth. I still think that the Pepsi Center is too expensive, but, you know, that's another rant.
I have actually sadly never been. I've been to McNichols many, many, many times.
But I never saw a game at McNichols. I just didn't have the money, and there you have it. Anyways.
Multiple sellouts, 16,061 people.
Yeah,
I'm very emphatic about that, 61.
The other thing is that, you know, it's very what have you done for me lately in a way. And we were talking about this, the loyalty of sports teams. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're right. You know, Peter Budaj did not step up after after that season, after, you know, after that, that basically to me an incredible run where he stole Jose Theodore's starting job. And, you know, he should have. It would have been great, but it didn't happen. And I think that he's a very capable goaltender, but for some reason isn't playing within that right now. And I think he could. I think that he probably got a little bit not necessarily an unfair shake, but I think he probably could have done. I think he could probably do better. And maybe we'll see that. Also, we're talking about a rookie coach, a rookie NHL coach, who frankly admitted that he should have used Budaj more. And when we were, as fans, watching Craig Anderson, you could see Craig Anderson getting tired. Everybody could see it. They had back-to-back road starts for Craig Anderson. And
that Olympic break and helped him so much.
Helped Anderson?
Yeah.
He thinks that it threw him off. And I think that he needed some time. Back,
but I think overall, just having that rest helped a lot.
Yeah. Well, he, you know, and so maybe we'll see a little bit more Budaj next year. Maybe we'll see something a little bit different.
The part that bugs me about it, though, is I see you re-sign your players if they're restricted free agents.
Mm-hmm.
He was unrestricted.
Right.
He could have gone anywhere. They could have gotten anybody else. And
right.
Okay, maybe there is something there that...
Well, the devil you know kind of thing, or...
I guess so.
Hmm.
I would prefer to see them go in a different direction. Obviously, the management didn't.
Right.
Then again,
well, and a lot
I also thought
is...
the management should have gone to 100 different directions last summer that they didn't. And then they became a really charming team that even here in Vancouver, Canucks fans, who are supposed to loathe the Avalanche,
right,
admit that last year's team, kind of charming.
Well, yeah.
Hard to hate.
The... One of the things also, of course, is that we don't know what goes on in the locker room. We don't know everything. So when...
intangibles.
Well, even beyond that, you know, is somebody a problem in the locker room? We hear about locker room cancers all the time, but we don't hear that from people that are actually in the locker room. We hear that from people who speculate and guess. And, you know, we don't know if you know, if Peter Budaj is bad or good. We don't know if Tyler Wyman had a couple issues that maybe translated to the team. We don't know these things.
Joe Sacco did coach Wyman for couple of years, I guess.
And I wonder if there's something he saw that maybe, you know, could have been a reason that Wyman didn't get called up. Now, I saw Wyman play with the Colorado Eagles of the Central Hockey League when he won Goaltender of the Year, Rookie of the Year, and they won the championship that year. So, I mean, he was pretty impressive, but, you know, of course that's the Central Hockey League. That's two tiers. And at the time, a little closer to three tiers down from the NHL.
Is that during the lockout year?
That might've been, I don't remember.
Holy crap. Those are good numbers.
Yeah. But that's Central Hockey League, you know,
And even still.
And the Colorado Eagles are stacked and always have been a stacked team. They have to play within a very strict salary cap, but going to play for the Colorado Eagles has its own benefits. Really solid housing. There's a lot of good benefits for playing for the Colorado Eagles.
Where do they play?
They play in, right outside of Fort Collins, Colorado.
Okay.
So about 35 miles north of Denver.
I miss Colorado.
Yeah, it's great. I love Colorado. Okay, so I'm a little more pro Budai than you are.
And I thought you were anti-Budai.
I am not anti-Budai. I think that I think Budai has his kind of has his perks. You know, I think he's kind of like the Wojtek Wolski, where he's got all that potential, and then
and all he needs is the trade of the Coyotes.
You never know. You never know. I mean, that's the thing, you know. There, you know, I look at what's his name, Mueller, and I only say what's his name because he was injured during the playoffs, and if he wasn't, I would probably just have it right on the tip of my tongue. But you know, what was holding back Mueller in Phoenix? I mean, was there a problem with Gretzky coaching him or with the system there that maybe just didn't work for him? And that's just sometimes the way it is. There is no one direct path. Teams don't take one path in development and all 30 teams do the exact same thing. Obviously, you know, we talked about teams taking the minor leagues even seriously. So, you know, is there, you know, do some of these guys have some issues that maybe it's a development issue or a system issue that the change of scenery isn't just about, you know, getting away from the Toronto media?
In which case, I ask, if you look, like I said, Mueller and Volsky traded for one another, change of scenery did wonders for them. And talking about Budai, and right. You say for Colorado's perspective, devil you know versus not.
Right.
So is that then the same from Budai's point of view?
Well,
I go to another system, or I'm kind of not necessarily getting my chance here. I think I could be better. So, but why don't I just go with the devil I know and re-up with Colorado?
Well, maybe. I mean, you know, that'll kind of depend on your agent too. I mean, what was he fielding? What was he seeing? And, you know, maybe just staying, you know, imagine that, you know, you've bought your house. You've bought your place. I mean, Budai was in Hershey when that was part of the Avalanche system. You know, it's not like he's unfamiliar with the territory. You know, and maybe his agent said, look, we're not going to get a lot elsewhere, or we're not going to, you know, let's see what happens here. Back up Anderson, challenge for it. It's who knows? I mean, at that point, 1.25 is not cheap. You know, it's still cheap for a goaltender, but you know, everybody was looking at cheap goaltending this year.
And at least as for the detractors like myself, it's a one-year deal.
It is a one-year
deal. And then he's probably out. At which point, Craig Anderson, if he has anything remotely close to last year, as far as success with the team and not three-year the deal, completely identical numbers that you pointed out, which I admit I did not know.
He'll get a fifth of a DPHRO. 3 years at $4 million, 4.5 or $4 million a year, yeah, sure.
And he's just at 1.8 roughly right now, right. So you'll just take Budai's money and put him in there anyway.
What did everybody say? You know, look at last year's goaltending in the for the final four, you know, the final four slots of the the Stanley Cup Finals. You know, the conference finals, three out of the four were extremely cheap, and while that's true. Don LaGreca of NHL Live pointed out on his Twitter account the other day, oh yeah, but three of the four starting goaltenders in the for the Stanley Cup or for the conference finals are gone. They're no longer with their team. Niemi's gone. Nabokov's gone. Boucher is still there, but Halak is gone
too. Yeah,
right. But it was Boucher who started in the conference. Conference final still.
And everybody calls Layton the playoff hero, but he really didn't come in until partway through that Boston comeback.
And, you know, that's You know, but, you know,
More power to him.
Both of them, you know. I mean, and look who's gone, though. Halak's gone. What? Nabokov? Okay, well, some can see that, you know, but and Niemi's gone. That's crazy. And everybody was heralding the cheap goaltender.
The Detroit system.
Now how many are still there? You know, it's like,
well, everybody's cheering on the disposable goalie system, except that the disposable part was proven a little earlier than. But I'm going to channel Lyle Richardson, ooh, Spectre's hockey.
Ooh.
And say, bring honestly, this year, an anomaly. A complete and utter anomaly.
Which part?
That so many teams managed to make it that far with such poor goaltending. And again, I say you and I saw Niemi play live, and he was actually better than a lot of people were giving him credit for.
I just pulled up the stats, and I was selected by the NHL for a survey. I feel really special, let me tell you.
They've asked me that about 7 times this week.
Well, I mean, okay, let's go one through. Let's take a look at the standings real fast. I mean, and take a look at goaltending for the top 8 in each. Washington, cheap and young. Devils, first round exit, not so much. Buffalo Sabres should have gone farther, but with Ryan Miller, there's no, you know, no complaint about him.
None for me either.
Pittsburgh Penguins, I find Fleury kind of streaky.
Oh, I find him too. He would freak me out. Not as much as the next team on the list, my very own Ottawa Senators.
I don't know why the Ottawa Senators are still an NHL team. Boston Bruins.
The Ron Tugnutt effect. He's kept them afloat. Those were during their poor years too, where they're financially unstable.
Oh, you mean other than that one? Anyways, the Boston Bruins took a Rask was pretty much the guy who got them there,
taking out the job of the Vezina winner from the previous year, Thomas,
Tim the Checker Thomas. Flyers cheap and Montreal Canadiens cheap. You look at the Western Conference, Luongo out in the second round, right? Is that Chicago got rid of him in the second round?
Yeah, 2 years in a row, same date.
Phoenix
one
Coyotes.
Year anniversary.
Phoenix Coyotes finally, you know, they make the playoffs. They're fourth in the conference, you know, behind Brizgalov. And Brizgalov's, I'm having a hard time connecting dollars to success necessarily. You know, it's like, I understand that it's a nice stat, but it's kind of like plus minus. It's an extremely imperfect science, and it only means as much as you want to write into it. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I can't say that, you know, expensive or cheap goaltending got Dallas where they were, or the St. Louis Blues where they were, or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, look at Capitals. Was it their goaltending that got them the President's Trophy? No, it was their offense.
Although Theodore did have an incredibly great record and incredible streak.
And then he was benched for the playoffs. Coaching move, you know, that's all questionable. But, you know, look at – and then who's second on the list? New Jersey Devils, first round exit. Who's next on the list?
Now they have a backup with a no movement
clause.
Buffalo
Sabres. Buffalo was, I believe, a first round exit?
Yep.
Top three. And was it goaltending? Maybe in the case of – maybe.
In Buffalo-Boston, it actually, in a way, was, but it wasn't so much that Ryan Miller's goaltending was awful. Mm. It was that Tuukka Rask's was that much better.
Right.
I mean, they were 1-2 in goals against average and save percentage the regular
season. So you're
going
to – exactly. Yeah, and Tuukka Rask was number one. That's
but
the
then
crazy
Rask
part.
Bows out in the next round against the Boucher-Layton combination.
Right, which, you know, that was the meltdown of the century. But it kind of proves the point in a way, I think. Well, not necessarily proves the point. It disproves, I think, the cheapness factor. I totally see that there are goaltenders that get signed for big dollars and then suddenly melt down. Tim Thomas is an excellent example. You know, Tim Thomas should have been better than he was this year, and he signed a contract that's getting him paid. But
a contract that actually now is worse than the Habib Bulins, if you discount the DUI, in that it's also a 35+, and it's worth more money, and he's just about as untradeable because of it.
And yet, Vezina winner the season before.
Jim Carrey won a Vezina trophy.
Oh, you know what? I loved him in the Truman Show. Loved him in the Truman Show. Listen, Andrew Raycroft won the Calder. So who cares? I mean, these things are, you know, I remember there were people who were upset about who won the coach of the year, the Jack Adams last year. You know, who cares? And really, you know, it doesn't matter that much. It's the media voting on something. You know, it's the media generally voting on these things. So who cares? You know, what was it? The Hart went to
Henrik Sedin.
Went to Henrik Sedin.
It's now the Ted Lindsay Award.
Yeah, which, you know, I have no complaint about. That's fine. You know, dude was big for the NHLPA. It's, you know, who was the Ovechkin won the
third year in a row.
Which one was it?
Ted Lindsay this year and previous years was Lester B. Pearson. It's the one voted on by the players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sidney Crosby won the ever prestigious Mark Messier Leadership Award, right? And, you know, I mean, that's, you
Roberto
know.
Roberto Luongo was one of the nominations, not in the final ones.
Right.
But at one point, NHL.com, they had a little vote thing. And my options included Dustin Brown of L.A. and Roberto Luongo at Vancouver.
Well, you know. I
voted
you,
Brown.
Again, marketing. You know, what are we talking about here? We're talking about the NHL and we're talking about marketing.
They're pointing to captains.
Oh.
And, yeah.
Wait a minute. We're talking about captains?
Mm-hmm.
He's not officially a captain.
Luongo?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
No, he's not officially.
He is?
Because you are not allowed by NHL rules to have a goaltender as captain.
The goaltender is not allowed to wear the C. As far as a marketing stunt goes, I'm just going to move my computer around here on the official roster. There he is with C.
Yeah, what's it in? What's it in? Quotes.
They're all in quotes.
Yeah, that one should be double quotes. That should be triple quotes.
To be fair, most people I've talked to in this city really don't want him as captain.
No, of course
not.
Hate
him as captain.
Of course they do.
Kessler's the guy here.
Yes. No. Yes. You know, it's, well, you know, you have to be able to tell your captains apart, and that's why he can't be a Sedin bot.
Well, actually, but the beginning of the year, Henrik had an A, Daniel didn't, and that was really nice way to be able to tell them apart.
Yeah, that's
true. One had an extra letter.
There was, I love bringing up the story that even they tell about when one of them got waved out of the face-off circle, and he skates around his, basically him and his brother just skated around each other, and the same Sedin came back to the face-off circle and got and took the face-off, and it's like, oh, that'll never happen again. Okay, so I think that what we have come up with here, what we have concluded with, is that who knows.
Hockey, imprecise.
That's why I love it. It's, you know, it's part of why I love the minors, is that, you know, there are so many mistakes that you can capitalize on, and in the NHL there are less of them, but in the minor leagues there's just all these, you know, you know, who's gonna win tonight? Hey, who knows? Let's go watch a game. You know,
well, this also makes the fun thing about bantering, right, and doing one of these. And I see across here you're wearing a Puck Podcast t-shirt.
Oh yeah. The number one podcast, hockey podcast on the internet, www.puckpodcast.com. Those guys rock.
If you are interested ever, take a look back and download the episodes for trade deadlines of years past.
Oh, yeah.
And like, the first week in July in days past and draft day in days past. And listen to them break down on the spot, like we're doing right now,
Right. Situations
like Antti Niemi. Like, man, this is going to be just awful. This is a great pickup of Peter Forsberg by the Nashville Predators. I love this. And it rarely works out the way that you expect.
Right.
Like, very rarely.
Well, you know, also what were we talking about? We're talking about instant analysis rather than, you know, taking a minute, you know, taking a day or two. I remember, you know, people get pissed off at Puck Daddy for not being, you know, not immediately talking about something. Well, the guy, you know, you got to have, you know, sometimes it's nice to take a moment, take a step back and actually think about something, you know. That's, I don't know, that's just my thought, you know.
Bit of a thoughtful analysis instead of just a news aggregator.
I think that's, and I then think having that's a comment place, type. You know. I mean, I can go back to my blog.
Which I have open.
I'm sorry.
See a nice picture of you here with Tyler Seguin.
Thank
holding
you.
Is that the Coke?
And looking in? At July 1st, 2006. Chris Mason Yeah, why it took this long to sign him, I don't know. Maybe it was required of the team, but if I were him, I'd be asking for more playing time. You know, whoop-de-doo, you know? Dwayne Rolison re-signs with the Oilers. Good for him. How'd that work out? Not so well. Gerber goes to Ottawa.
To be fair, again, as a fan of two cities, but in this case, Ottawa, my reaction that day was, what the hell's a Martin Gerber? And then immediately heading to Google, making sure, no, that really is spelled the same way as the baby food.
Nice. Here's my, Keith Carney went to the Minnesota Wild. And here's my stunning analysis. The funniest thing I've ever heard yelled at a player was at the 2003 Stanley Cup Finals, Game 7, Ducks at Devils. Hey, Carney, guess my weight. Yeah.
Okay, that's good. That's
my analysis.
I had an experience in San Jose where this one guy is looking down, and this is in the Mike Rathje era, who just started blizzing out, hey, Rathje, you insert a bunch of censored words here. And then his 7-year-old daughter next to him, hey, Rathje, he's right, you insert a whole bunch of words here.
Hockey, if you, maybe you don't get the NHL Network, hockey is for everyone. Ryan Classic, thank you very much for coming on the rink. Thank you for talking to me.
Sir.
It's nice to actually have you face-to-face rather than over a Skype connection. Ryan Classic can be found on Twitter, of course, at Ryan Classic, and writing for the Sports Blog Nation Ottawa Senators blog occasionally from time to time. And probably starting a new blog called I Love Ron Tugnut. And if
Tuggers Anonymous.
Tuggers Anonymous, I like it. That actually sounds, let's, maybe, you'll probably not get quite the traffic
look
you're
for that
expecting
domain name
for.
Right now.
Yeah. Ryan, thanks a lot.
No problem. Thanks a lot for having me.
The Rink is a totally independent production. If you want to help support The Rink, you can help in a few ways. You can review the show in iTunes, which you might be surprised is a really big help. You can comment on anything that you heard here at the Rink website at www.rinkpodcast.com. And you can call in to the Rink at 845-704-7465. That's 845-704-RINK. And you can tell any other hockey fans that you think would like it about the show. I'd love to have them listening, and I'm really happy to have you on board. Thanks a lot for listening to the Rink.